Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the DS Smith pre-close statement call. My name is Faye, and I'll be your coordinator for today's conference. For the duration of the call, you'll be on listen only. However, at the end, you will have the opportunity to ask questions. I will now hand you over to your host, Miles Roberts, to begin. Thank you.
Hi, good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us today. I'm Miles Roberts, the CEO of DS Smith, and I'm here with Adrian Marsh, our CFO. This morning, we're very pleased to release a brief pre-close statement ahead of our year-end later today. I'd like to make a couple of points by way of summary, after which we'll be delighted to take any questions you may have. Our group performance has continued fully in line with our expectations, driven by growth across our businesses and the ongoing delivery of the synergies from SCA. We're pleased. In summary, the market and business trends from our interim management statement in early March have continued. Our like-for-like corrugated box volume growth has remained good and ahead of our target of GDP plus 1%. And we've experienced particularly strong growth in Germany and Central and Eastern Europe. But this volume growth reflects market share gain from our increasingly strengthening customer proposition, driven by innovation and removing the complexity and cost from our customers' supply chains. Return on sales and return on capital employed have both continued to improve as the benefits of our business model continue to flow through. So our outlook remains positive, and we expect continued performance in line with our medium-term financial targets. Thank you. I'd now like to welcome any questions anybody may have.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone keypad. If you change your mind and wish to withdraw your question, please press star one again. You will be advised when to ask your question. And our first question is from the line of Barry Dixon from Davy. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. A couple of questions, if you wouldn't mind. Miles, you talk about the sort of positive performance in terms of volumes on corrugated. Could you give us a sense, I suppose, in terms of what's happening with prices over the last couple of months? I mean, clearly, I think there were some price increases achieved in December and January, but just in the current environment of weakening containerboard prices, how easy or difficult is it to sort of recover further increases in corrugated? You might just give us some sense as to where prices are year to date. Just secondly, on your recycling business, maybe some thoughts around OCC pricing. We've seen some weakness in that of late. And maybe your own thoughts in terms of how you see the outlook for OCC pricing progressing for the rest of the year. And thirdly, you've identified Germany and Central European markets as being strong. Are there any areas around Europe that you're seeing sort of like that you're disappointed in terms of volume growth on corrugators? Thank you.
Yeah, fine. No, thanks for that. As you know, we have a short paper position, and when price of paper go up, we recover it with a lag, and when prices of paper go down, we pass that back to our customers. So it really is, it sort of flows in and out, and the prices of paper of testliner had been increasing last year, and we were recovering exactly as we expected to. Obviously then the price starts to come off, so we stop recovering, and then in a period of time, those prices will, the prices of packaging will fall back. I mean, it sort of goes up and down, and we just sort of follow that. It's not a, I think we said many times, we have no idea where the price of paper is going to go, but we just want to insulate our shareholders from this as much as we possibly can. So prices have come down, and we'll see where they go in the future. That's been in testliner, and we're also seeing a significant weakness in kraft as well. But you know, we're not here to sell tons of paper. We're here to work with our customers, and those price increases or decreases just flow through. So if paper prices reduce or stay where they are, we'll see a reduction in box prices. If they go up, we'll see an increase in box prices. But, you know, as you always say, it's extremely volatile. What we are seeing, which leads on to your next question, is an increasing use of recycled. We've got a number of our major customers now only wanting to use recycled. They don't want craft to be part of their customer proposition. That has, I think that increasing use of recycled, it's quite interesting because the price of recycled has started to slightly moderate and come down, but the price of OCC, which is one source of fibre, has stayed relatively constant. As you know, we have a formidable recycling business, and we aim to get fibre from many sources, of which OCC is just one of those sources. So we are able to switch between different routes to get the fibre. Where does OCC go in the future? I mean, we just don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it stayed constant. It has been for the last 18 months. We see increasing use of test. If I had to make a prediction, I think it's probably going to stay relatively constant.
Yeah, seems very different. Chinese buying again.
Yeah. It's notoriously, whatever we say, it's usually wrong. So we'll wait to see. But there does seem to be an ongoing good demand for recycled fibres, whether that's OCC, newsprint, or other mixed papers. And as you know, we've got a formidable source and a formidable collection business. So we continue to have a good readily available supply. But I wouldn't be surprised if it stayed constant if I had to make a prediction. Yeah, in Germany, Eastern Europe, yeah, it has been very strong. Which markets are disappointing? Well, there's no doubt we had some very poor weather at the beginning of the year in the UK, and that was a temporary. Some of our customers have some production issues, but that sort of come back. France remains a challenging economy. We are seeing some limited growth there, but there's no doubt that the industrial sector over the last few months has been difficult. The industrial part of our business in France, which is about 20% of our activity there, is 80% FMCG for us, so we are extremely resilient, but just generally the economy is difficult. But in the rest of the areas, they've been constant and pretty much in line with our expectations. Yeah. To say, just sort of UK weather for sort of 6 or 8 weeks.
You saw it through on retail sales, so I mean you've got a good look through to what happens to us to some extent. There was a very poor start to the year for the major retailers. You've seen that in all of the Kantar data that came out. Not unsurprisingly, if products aren't flying off shelves, then boxes aren't going on shelves as quick either. The UK was certainly slower at the beginning of the year than we would have liked. And as Mel says, France is just a difficult market at the moment.
But Italy's been surprisingly strong. Germany and Eastern Europe, Nordics pretty constant.
Denmark's good.
Yeah, so overall, pretty much where we expect it to be, but there's always a little bit of a mix there.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thank you.
No, not at all.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Catriona O'Grady from UBS. Please go ahead.
Morning, all. Three questions from me. Firstly, can you give us any guidance around what the market-weighted GDP was for your Q4? Secondly, and it's kind of the other side of Barry's question, were there any standouts or particularly weak end markets that you saw during kind of the back end of the year? And thirdly, I know at the half year you flagged that there might be some box capacity coming online in Germany. Have you seen that, and has there been any other kind of competitive capacity changes that have had any impact on kind of pricing dynamics in any of your markets? Thanks.
Look, if I just We'll obviously get the GDP for our Q4, but we think it's going to be somewhere around probably 0.6, 0.7. That's our our prediction. It has increased very modestly on the back of a European, modest improvement. Again, we don't expect Europe to bound forward, but this sort of GDP growth is within our range. So around about 0.6, 0.7%, possibly. Slight uptick on where we were last year. In terms of the end markets, the Europe remains pretty much in its, in terms of the end markets, you know, there is this issue of where actual sort of disposable income in a number of regions of Europe remains under pressure. It's certainly the case in the UK, more from a distribution of income issue, but that's replicated across a number of other countries. So even if you see average wages going up at or just slightly below inflation, there is a distribution effect, and so therefore generally we see the consumer under pressure in a number of regions. I think probably the exception could argue is Germany, where we're starting to see some quite high wage inflation coming through. But generally the end markets remain pretty subdued. They are improving, but it does remain pretty challenged. And you can see it in our collections of recycled. You can see the typically across Europe, the discounters in the retail space tend to do pretty well. Mm-hmm. They're only a very small part of the UK, but everybody's obviously read about the effect that they're having on the multiple grocers, but that's not untypical of other parts of Europe. So we haven't seen any real weakening. It's just improving slightly, but there remains a general sort of caution in consumers. I think the only trend we're seeing is probably Germany, where wage inflation really is starting to outstrip general inflation. And just keeping on Germany, box capacity, yep, there's more coming on in Germany. I think we've talked about this before. When you have very low interest rates across a whole region, you tend to get bubbles appearing when the economies in some areas are strong. Low interest rates, you get a lot of investment, particularly when there's some significant tax advantages for that for private companies. And we have seen investment going into Germany. I haven't heard of any new announcements in the last 3 months, but it's something that we expect, and we'll probably continue for a little while. But it's all within our expectations. I think the new capacity that's come on stream or has been announced in the last year is about 6 or 7% of the German productive capacity in box plants. So that's a bit of a nuisance, but it's probably about 2 or 3 years growth, and that comes on in stages. So it's never helpful, but it's one of those things, and it's one market, and it's relatively modest.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of David O'Brien from Goodbody. Please go ahead.
Good morning, guys. Just a couple from me. Just going back to corrugated pricing, you know, innovation is clearly a central part of the business on the corrugated front for your customers. I'm just gonna, against the backdrop of falling paper prices, how difficult is it going to be to, you know, actually get paid for that innovation? And, you know, we've seen the innovation centres where you're now driving revenue as opposed to taking cost out. Can you actually capture margin from that process? Secondly, could you just give us an update on how the acquisition pipeline is looking, and maybe finally just a comment on the plastics business?
Yeah. Look, it's a great question. This pressure on the final consumer, coming from the final consumer, I think we spoke about this before, you know, the old days of my costs have gone up, therefore I'm just going to push it through, just isn't the order of today. You may have increasing costs, but if your customer can't afford to pay the price, you're not going to get it through. And I think this is partly behind the reduction in paper prices, is the end consumer just can't pay. Well, putting it bluntly, this is what we've been working on, the ability to take cost out of our customers' total supply chain is quite remarkable. Our volumes are growing, our return on sales is growing, and our return on capital is also growing. And that is an indication of the value that we're able to start to generate for our customers. It's not just about a new shaped box, it's about their total supply cycle. And here we're finding a very, very strong reception, allied with a pan-European footprint as our customers want to consolidate their supplier platforms. We're finding both of those are giving us, good opportunities to be paid for the value that we're adding. Now, obviously, if you have a product that's completely commoditized and anybody can produce it, there's very little sort of innovation that you can really bring to add value. So on the tail end, it's always difficult, but we are finding our last customers increasingly coming towards it, and that's partly behind our confidence for the future. And this, in terms of the acquisition, there are a number of businesses that are out there that we're looking at, and the reason they are up for sale is because of this consolidation of the supply platform by our large customers. We don't see that going away, neither some of our competitors. So there are a number of small acquisitions that are out there, and I think we will just see some ongoing consolidation. We're certainly pretty active in there, and we'll give the details of that when we announce our results.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say the same. We're very focused on returns when we look at acquisitions, and we're very focused on whether they're customer-led or not. Mm. So, you know, we have, across my desk, pretty much every week you'll get an offer of a business for sale, but for us, we have some reasonably strict criteria on whether we look at it or not at the moment.
Mm. What's particularly attractive to us, it's not necessarily the actual assets, it's just a route to market for the technology that we're developing. That's what we find particularly attractive. A route to market, and obviously we're establishing a lot of more and more of the design centres that are rolling out. We're now up over 20, and we're going to double that again. It's just all about route to market for our technology. Now, you talked about plastics, and here we are seeing again a good performance. There's increasing demand for the bag-in-box solution. The recycle proposition that has easy to use and a better transportation cost for the finished product. We continue to see that growing. Indeed, we've got quite a bit of investment going into that at the moment. We've got basically the creation of it's not quite a new factory because we do already have a footprint, but we are sort of trebling the size of one factory and doubling the size of another at the moment, just to cope with the increasing demand. And again, we don't expect that to see that go. We expect to see that continue to develop over the coming years. So again, we're very pleased with that, and you should see a good development there as well.
Yeah. Great, that's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Justin Jordan from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
G- Good morning, everyone. I just want to ask two sort of DF-specific questions, if I could, please. When you talk about improving return on sales, are you, and I'm referring particularly, I guess, to Germany and Central and Eastern Europe here, which you're alluding to in the statement, are you alluding to a sequential improvement in second half fiscal 14 and first half fiscal 14? Or I'm just trying to get a little bit more color of the improving return on sales. And secondly, just in terms of the cash flow, can you give us some filter or guidance as to what the restructuring costs have been as incurred in the second half of fiscal 14? I'm just trying to think in terms of what the working capital has been, also given the strong performance in the first half of fiscal 14. And just, I guess, what I'm working to is some sort of idea of where net debt at the year end has been in relation to the 773 it was at the interim stage.
Yeah, of course. If you want to talk about RS, and you're happy with the cash flow. When we talk about the return, we're talking about the group relative for the full year relative to last year. But in fact, even if you break it down first half, second half, you'll see an improvement on both of those. First half, second half versus first half, second half of last year for the group overall. When we look at about the breakdown we give you in terms of the regional segmentation we provide, you're going to see an improvement on both of those again. I would have to check, but I'm pretty sure you will again, yeah, on a first half, second half, and over last year. Obviously not, we haven't finalised the results, but I think we're pretty sure we're going to see a further improvement there, first half, second half, over last year. Yeah, I don't think I think we'll see improvements there on both of those regions as well.
Just so I'm
clear. We haven't finalised the year end results, and there's
no. I appreciate it, but I'm just trying to be very clear here. You know, the DACH operating margin was, or return on sales was 8.5% in the first half. Are you saying that's improved in the second half? And similarly, the Central and Eastern Europe was, Central Europe initially was 7.8 in the first half. Has that improved in the second half?
Right. Let's just come. We haven't got the final for this this month. I think it will be, but I can come back and just confirm.
The
reason I'm sort of slightly hesitating is purely because of the paper. We have some paper in that in the DACH region, and it's just how that flows through. I think I'm pretty sure we'll see any improvement, but we'll come back to you. Okay,
yeah,
we'll just come back and check on that. It's just this sort of mix issue that is why I'm sort of slightly hesitating.
And then on working capital and net debt, then.
And your question on that was: are you expecting a significant improvement again in the second half?
Oh, well, it's I think 3.6% in the first half was a pretty stellar performance, I'm just wondering what the second half performance has been, and equally any other factors we should be thinking about in terms of second half cash flows working down towards the net debt number at the year end.
Yeah, I wouldn't on in terms of working capital, I wouldn't be anticipating an improvement over the half year. I would have be looking at a continuation. And in terms of net debt, again, I think at the half year, we were when we described it, we weren't predicting material changes from where we were at the half year, other than that we're focused on improving. So I don't know if that helps you at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. And can you just one factual number? And what were the cash restructuring costs incurred in the second half of the year?
I think you'll have to wait until we put our results up.
Fine.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Alexander Mees from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Three quick ones, I hope. Just firstly, could you tell us what the mix of corrugated is between FMCG and industrial and how the trends are there? Secondly, I wonder if you wouldn't mind just briefly commenting on shelf-ready packaging. We haven't heard much about demand trends in shelf-ready for a while. I just wonder if you could give us an update. And then thirdly, just circling back on the earlier question about acquisitions, I wonder if you could just explain whether your priority is for infill or new markets, and if there are particular markets you're focused on, please.
Yeah, the mix FMCG, it does continue to improve on FMCG. So last year we were about 60%, and this year will be better than that. Again, we'll just have to do all the analysis at the year end, but I'm surprised if we're sort of over 61 plus. That's where our growth is coming from. But I say again, you know, because it's very resilient, in the downturn it doesn't go down, but when the economies improve, there is a pickup, but it's not as if we're behind the housing sector. So we like to think of our growth as good quality or sustainable growth, building in these strong categories and not just sort of riding on the back of a housing boom. So we're all seeing improvement there, and we're very pleased about that. Yeah, in terms of shelf-ready packaging, I mean, we find this absolutely fascinating. As you know, our finance director joins us from Tesco, and he luckily confirms everything that we've been saying. And here we really see a number of trends in the final markets, one of which is in the convenience sector and the significant growth there that we're seeing not only in the UK but in other parts of Europe with the ongoing urbanisation, and that absolutely plays to shelf-ready packaging. We're seeing very strong growth in shelf-ready packaging, but particularly in the convenience sector, because the stores are so small. The product has to fit exactly where it should go. It needs to be very easily replenished because you can't have a lot of staff milling around in a very modestly sized store. So we're seeing a huge push in shelf-ready packaging, but particularly in the convenience sector where we're getting the growth. The other area for shelf-ready is in display. You know, advertising, it isn't anywhere as near as powerful for the brand as it was in previous years. More promotional activity, more theatre at the point of display. It's about the communication of the product to the consumer at the point of purchase. So we're seeing, again, a lot of growth in this sort of display format, which again is very sort of akin to shelf ready. Now outside that, the other area we're getting very a consumer trend is obviously in e-commerce, and there, if e-commerce is built on picking from store, which we know some large retailers it's a model they employ. Obviously, that's just that doesn't have any material effect on us. But when you're into the Amazons and similar companies, there we're getting a very strong growth in our volumes and product development that's going into those categories. So the outlook is we think shelf-ready is going to continue to grow, and you're going to see a lot more self-merchandising units which basically push the product to the front of the box. We've got a lot of technology there, and I think that's a really exciting area. You're going to see a lot more over the coming year. You're going to see a lot more in the convenience sector. You're going to see more display and an e-commerce. In all of those areas, we think we have a significant advantage over any of our competitors.
I mean, just adding to that, Alex, I was in Italy a couple of weeks ago, which is probably one of the least adopted shelf-ready markets in Europe. And we've got an innovation centre in Tuscany that was entirely set up to demonstrate to customers the benefit and the power of it. And it's only been up and running a few weeks now, and they're saying already they sort of been bowled over by the response from customers who just hadn't, you know, either considered it or taken the time to consider it, or had assumed that it wasn't relevant for the Italian market. So on top of what Miles is saying, we still have in Europe late adopting markets, which I think can convert too. Do you want me to pick the M&A one up?
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of M&A, whether our focus is on infill or new markets, I mean, we have a small team in the centre focused on business development. Clearly, where our customers are asking us or putting pressure on us to infill or to improve or increase capacity in markets we're currently in, that's an area of focus. That there's no doubt about. And the team are spending a lot of time on that. In terms of new markets, well, I mean, you'd expect us to constantly be challenging ourselves about whether we want to go into a new market or not, and what the relevance is and what sort of returns we'd need to make and what opportunities there might be there. So it is something we look at. I have to say, as it stands today, there isn't anything I think that we're feeling very positive about in terms of being able to tick all of the boxes, i.e. has an ability to generate the required return on capital for us in the required time frame, and is customer led, i.e. with having pressure put on us by our customers. But we are looking at it. In terms of infill, clearly that's the easier one for us to evaluate and put effort behind. So yeah, it is, and we are.
Thank you, and I look forward to that site visit to Tuscany.
Yeah, it's a very good idea.
Great.
Thank you. And our next question is from the line of Hector Forsyth from Oriel. Please go ahead.
Morning, guys. A bit of a wrap-up one from me. Can you just give us an update in terms of how you're developing your closed-loop strategy in continental Europe? It's less developed than in the UK, and how that all meshes with where you are in terms of your paper strategy and where you've got to in terms of redefining the amount of own production you have.
Absolutely. Well, look, this as you know, that in the UK we have a closed loop model. We pick up from all the major retailers in the high street, all the old corrugated cases. But we really work with those retailers to maximise the yield from their stores. And indeed, you work with a lot of other customers on all this closed loop. Nothing goes to landfill, nothing. And everything is logged, and we'll keep it inside a territory if that's required by the customer. The challenge for us is how do we increase the yield of fibre from Europe. And so we are establishing our position on the continent. We've made some very good move forwards there, which we will outline in our full year announcement. It does involve some very nice assets. It does involve some very nice assets which we're bringing in. We've highlighted France, Italy, and Eastern Europe before. And we're pleased with the progress there. We have brought in a number of major retailers with some assets, but we really see this model continue to grow as we're able to improve the yield of fibre, to increase the supply of OCC, so that we can ensure that our customers have a ready availability of a test liner, which is the which is increasingly the product of the format of choice by the end consumer. But we're pleased with progress there. It's coming on quite nicely.
Excellent. And then part of that is you're wanting to reduce your own paper production. Do you want to give us an update on that if you can?
If we come back at the year end, but we're very busy on that.
Thank you very much. Okay.
How we reduce that.
All right. Thank you very much then, guys.
Not at all.
Cheers, Victor.
Thank you. And we have no further questions, so please be reminded it's star one on your telephone keypad. Okay, and we have no further questions coming through.
Right. Just as a just a final few words. So in summary, we're pleased with the performance of the business in the year to date, despite market conditions that do remain challenging. The strength of our business model is shown by the continued increase in our volumes as customers seek to consolidate their supply bases. We are complete service from design to production, right through to supply and recycling, delivered across Europe, gives our customers the opportunity to package their products in a recycled, cost-effective material that provides consistent quality in both their supply chain and retail environment. We continue to see opportunities for growth in this market and are optimistic about the prospects for the business in the future. So thank you very much for your taking the time to dial in today. And obviously, we look forward to meeting you on our full year announcement on the 26th of June. So from us here, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's call. You may now replace your handsets.